Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 45 minutes on this 24th of January, 2011. Call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Super Bowl 45 is all set. The Packers and the Steelers, two of the league's most storied and legendary franchises, will go at it February 6th in Jerry's World. The ninth wonder of the world, or eighth wonder of the world, they call it down there in Arlington, Texas. And we'll begin with the Jets-Pittsburgh game, which was, to me, the better of the two games, of the two conference championship games. Pittsburgh taking off the Jets 24-19 in a game that was basically a game of two. It was basically two games in one. First half, Pittsburgh comes out 24-0. 24-0, and really the Steelers set the tone from the opening drive. The Jets defer the kickoff, which they had been doing all season long. Pittsburgh gets the ball 15 plays. They go 15 plays, 66 yards, 9 minutes off the clock. I mean, this was old classic Pittsburgh Steelers football back when, you know, forget about Jerome Bettis, but the Franco Harris, Rocky Blyer days. Okay, this was just smash mouth. You know, we're going to run it down your throat. You know we're going to run it. We're still going to do it anyway. Rashard Mendenhall was a big part of that drive, scored the touchdown to go up 7-0. And again, that set the tone for the entire game. I mean, that drive took 9 minutes off the clock. In real time, the Jets offense wasn't on the field for about 27 minutes. And from there on, that led the way for one of the most dominant performances in a championship game in recent memory, in a half. I mean, I have not seen, you know, I guess you have to go back to the Giants-Minnesota game back in 2001 season, excuse me, the 2000 season when they blew out Minnesota 41-0 to find a performance in a half that was as dominant as Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh did whatever they wanted to on the Steelers in that first half in terms of running the ball. Roethlisberger didn't even have to make. I mean, he made a few plays as far as picking up first downs on third down situations, had a touchdown himself. And, of course, the big play in that half was the brutal hit coming off by Ike Taylor on Mark Sanchez when the Jets were already down 17-0. Ike Taylor comes on a free blitz. Sanchez didn't see him coming. He knocks the ball and forces a fumble. And, of course, William Gay does the rest, picks up the fumble picks up the fumble and returns it, takes it to the house. And at that point, 24-0, it was basically game, set, match. This was as dominant first half as you will ever see. Steelers outgained the Jets 232-50 in the first half. Jets had one rushing yard in the first half. One. And this was Pittsburgh did whatever it wanted to as far as running the ball. Big day out of Rashard Mendenhall. Now, again, second half, Jets would get the ball, would score in the first half at the end of the first half with a field goal, got a key drive, which kind of sparked their mini comeback, fake comeback. And the reason, I'll tell you why it's a fake comeback. It's a fake comeback because the Jets never put the Steelers in a position where you thought the Steelers were not going to win that game. Never. I mean, the Jets, you know, they made a nice comeback. You give them credit for fighting hard, not laying down, not quitting. Got the lead within got it as close as 24-19, and you know, the Jets, Steelers would run the clock out. Ben Roethlisberger making two big converting, getting two key first downs, one to you know, Antonio Brown, the last one, and the one before that on a pass play by Heath Miller. That resulted in a first down. But the Jets, there was, you know, 24. There was no way that the Jets were going to come back in that game, down 24-0. It wasn't going to happen. And to me, I have a major problem with the Jets coming out flat. To me, flat as a pancake to start this game off. I mean, you cannot, on the road in the AFC Championship game, you cannot fall behind 24-0. 17-0, 10-0. Yeah, you just can't do it and expect to come back to win, especially against a defense, you know, the caliber of the Pittsburgh Steelers. All week long, the Jets played this role of, you know, the quiet ones. You know, they were very complimentary to Pittsburgh. They didn't say anything as a comparison to, you know, what, you know, the week leading up to the Patriot game. You know, I hate Brady, it's personal. F Brady, you know, with the Cromartie comments. And my point is to that is, be who you are. You know, don't all of a sudden switch up what you're doing because you know you're not as physical as Pittsburgh. You know there's a chance that they might hit you in the mouth as well as you might try to hit them in the mouth. Yeah, there was a reason why they were talking trash to New England. They knew New England was not a physical team. Besides the fact that they hate New England and the whole Brady, Belichick, and Rex Ryan, the reason why they didn't say anything up until this point, up until the week lead, up until the Steelers game, because they know the Steelers are probably more physical than them. So, they, you know, it's kind of like this bully mentality. The bully picks on people who he knows he can beat up, or if he, you know, he runs into somebody who can knock him out, or is his equal in terms of the fight, he kind of lays back. And that's what the Jets are. The Jets are the epitome of a bully football team. And that's what they are. You talk all the junk and all the trash to, you know, to the Patriots and to the Colts, who, you know, are, let's be honest with you, are not the most physical team. And then you come up to Pittsburgh and you come up to Pittsburgh and you're quieter than a church mouse. You don't have nothing to say. You know, we have all the respect in the world for the Steelers. You know, they're, you know, great organization. Troy Polamalu is one of the greatest players I've ever seen. You know, and so on and so on. It made me want to throw up last week hearing all this talk. All this, you know, this talk about how great the Steelers were. This is the anti-Jets. This is how the Jets have not been for the past since Hard Knocks and HBO. Be who you are. And to me, I think that's contributed to them coming out flat. You know, you've been this team with all this bravado for basically, you know, 20 weeks or what have you, 19, 20 weeks, going back to August. We're going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to do this. Soon to be champs. I'm not kissing Belichick's rings. All this stuff. This is going on for like 2 years now. So now this week you come in and then now you're humble now? Come on. Let's be for real. The humble Jets now. They're not buying that. I'm not buying that at all. You know, I don't want to hear this. You know, the Jets left something in New England. That there was a letdown. How you have a letdown in the AFC Championship? You're one game away from the Super Bowl. The Jets haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1969, Joe Namath. Now all of a sudden you have a letdown coming off because you beat your division rival. You Jets had some opportunities, you know, to get the game closer, much quicker, 24-10, a key moment in the game. They're down 24-10. They had the ball at the Pittsburgh one-yard line. They go second down. They do a second down run, and they go pass, run, and then run. And to me, with LT, they did all their runs with Ladainian Tomlinson, despite the fact that Sean Green had been running like a madman in the fourth quarter, breaking tackles left and right. He had a great run on, I believe it was a second and 18, where he picked up about 15, 16 yards. So you go up the middle with Ladainian Tomlinson, but that's not even Ladainian Tomlinson's strength, running up the middle. I mean, he's a guy who can leap over a pile, but he's not going to push a pile, especially at this stage in his career. So the play calling, you know, was something a lot left to be desired with that play calling in that sequence. That's, of course, when Pittsburgh got the goal line stand at 24-10. Then Pittsburgh goes up. Then the Jets get the safety. You know, the Jets get the safety. They're now 24-10. They would come back and get a touchdown. But, again, those drives that they had, the drive that they did not score at 24-10, got stopped at fourth and goal. They took way too long. That drive took about 8 minutes. They had a 17-play, 8-minute drive, 80-yard drive, and they got nothing out of it. And then, mind you, they're down 24-10. So they took entirely. They wasted too much time with those drives. It seems like there was a problem with the sideline, the Jet offensive people, Brian Schottenheimer and company, getting the plays in. So you hear Sanchez saying, "Hey, come on, let's go." He's ready. I mean, he was just completely on top of his game. He's like, "Let's go, let's keep this thing moving." And they're taking forever. I mean, you didn't know whether they were trailing or whether they were ahead. Lots very similar to the problems that the Patriots had last week against the Jets when they were behind. It took forever in terms of running their offense. But again, the better team won. I mean, that's all there is to it. Pittsburgh is, you know, you can't give Pittsburgh enough credit from, you know, you go back to that game that they lost against New England, and they looked terrible. I mean, New England took them apart, did whatever they wanted with them, and you thought, you know, hey, maybe Pittsburgh just is, you know, not their year. Maybe they're just a playoff caliber team. But ever since that game, they had the, you know, tough loss to the Jets. Ever since that, they played great. They played great last night. Did just enough last night. I mean, listen, they played second half did not play well at all. But to me, you know, when you're up 24-0, subconsciously you lose your edge, and I think that certainly contributed to the Jets getting back into the game. And the Jets stepped up their level of play. There's no question about it. The Jets were like on a level one in the first half, were about on level eight in the second. I mean, they went up a couple notches and just played much better. But Pittsburgh kind of relaxed, and, you know, you start clock watching. And a lot of things go into the other team coming back when you have a big lead in a championship caliber game. I've seen it a million times before, seen it in all sports. You have a big lead and you just have a tendency to relax. You know, you're not as intense, and the other team is desperate. They're taking chances, they're taking risks, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've let them back into the game. And that's what happened with Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger has a couple of throws, you know, had a couple of interceptions. Yeah, I heard you saw the bad snap with the center after, you know, Pouncey hurt his ankle. They had to put in a backup center. And, you know, they didn't run the ball as well in the second half, nowhere near as well as they did in the first half. But when it all came down to it, Roethlisberger, despite not throwing the ball well, made the plays that he absolutely had to make down in the last drive that Pittsburgh had the ball. I give Pittsburgh a lot of credit. I've seen a million times where teams go in and get real conservative and run the ball three times and then say, you know what, we're going to depend on our defense to to finish the game. Tomlin was having was not going to have any of that. We're going to stay aggressive. Second and eight, throws the ball, you know, completes a pass to Heath Miller, takes more time off the clock. Then you get the third down and six play to Antonio Brown, who also had the big catch last week against Baltimore that set up their game winning touchdown. Third and six. Roethlisberger rolls out. It was game over, and Pittsburgh basically was in the victory formation. So I give Tomlin a lot of credit for staying aggressive. And like he said after the game, he said, "I play to win. I don't play not to lose. I play to win." So you have to applaud Tomlin, who all of a sudden, 38 years old, is making his second, you know, Super Bowl appearance in 3 years. Again, he's already won one, and he's climbing the ladder as one of the best coaches in the league. He's already one of the best coaches in the league right now, but he's etching his name in Pittsburgh lore with what he's done in his first four seasons as head coach of the Steelers. You know, he came in 2007. So 24-19, Pittsburgh takes out the Jets. Again, I'm not fooled by this fake Jet comeback. I'm not going to get excited about the comeback. You know, if you're a Jet fan, you've been here and done that. You've lost in a championship game before. So I would not be all enamored by the fact that they were able to come back and take pride in that. Bottom line is, you had a coach who said you were going to win a Super Bowl, and, you know, it came up two games short. 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the NFL Show. When we return, we'll shift over to the AFC, and as the Packers made the game and their conference championship win a lot harder than it should have been. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about this Jay Cutler fiasco, which is, you know, I have plenty to say about that, and we will have a sneak peek at Super Bowl 45 as well. Cyril Quinn taking you to 8:45 tonight on this latest edition of the NFL Show. You can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or make a comment or question at facebook.com/Cyril Quinn. The NFL Show question of the day is, who you think does Green Bay deserve to be favored over Pittsburgh? Green Bay is a two and a half point favorite over Pittsburgh in the upcoming Super Bowl. So based on what you've seen throughout the season, and of course what you saw yesterday afternoon and yesterday night, do they deserve to be favored over the Pittsburgh Steelers? We'll be right back. After the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 8:45 tonight as we talk about as we look back at the conference championships. Super Bowl 45 is all set. Pittsburgh and Green Bay, the two most legendary franchises in the sport, when you base it on the championships that they've won and all the Super Bowls, and, you know, Lombardi and Ham and me, the Steel Curtain, it's just a lot of history. You will not find a more historic Super Bowl matchup possible than these two teams beating up. Of course, before Pittsburgh was able to take care of business against the Jets, the Packers were the first to punch their ticket to the Super Bowl as they took out the Bears 21-14 in a game that, you know, that was almost frustrating to watch because, number one, you obviously, for two reasons. Number one, you wanted, you know, I was rooting for the Packers and Steelers. I'm not going to sit here and even lie to you. I was, because I wanted to see that classic Super Bowl matchup, but I also wanted a competitive game. And, you know, 14-0 with the Packers having the ball driving around 21-0, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this game is completely over with. So I was disappointed from that standpoint. And the second reason I was kind of disappointed in the game is because is I'm looking for the Packers to have a killer instinct, and they didn't, and they did not have it at all. And it's something to, I think that should be, it's something to look at going into Super Bowl 45. Packers, like the Steelers, set the tone from the opening drive. They take the ball down the field, 84 yards, 7 plays, and it was capped off by Aaron Rodgers, touchdown run. Beautiful, just beautiful play fake. The defense bit fully. That drive was a textbook drive. He was throwing the ball. He basically picked up right where he left off in the Atlanta game for that first particular drive. Again, that really set the tone for the first half. Green Bay just, you know, Green Bay just dominated the first half. And, again, had numerous opportunities to put this game away. Chicago was off offensively. Cutler, even before he left the game with the injury, couldn't hit the side of a barn. He missed first down passes. He missed a near touchdown pass to Devin Hester, or would have been a big time game for them. So Chicago's offense was non-existent in the first half. Matter of fact, Chicago had 100 yards of offense in the first half. Green Bay again did whatever they wanted to in terms of going up and down the field, but could not put the game away. Green Bay has the ball. In the second quarter, Green Bay had the ball on a third in the second quarter, third and one, and was stopped deep in Chicago territory. Then they were again driving. They were again driving down the field. They again had the ball, and Lance Briggs picks off a Aaron Rodgers pass, which bounced off Donald Driver's shoe, that stopped the drive, and they went into halftime up 14-0. I'll get into the Cutler thing now in terms of that, because apparently Cutler was injured before the half. Cutler gets hit on the play, and I'll give you the sequence of events like this. He gets hit on the knee. Green Bay gets the ball back. They go down. They have a short field. And they go down and get nothing out of it. That's when you had the Lance Briggs interception. Okay. Get the ball back. Cutler goes back in the game. And this is important because he was injured on the play before, in the series before. So he goes back in the game. Throws an interception to Sam Shields. Sam Shields makes a great play, and Shields had a huge day, forced fumble and two interceptions, including the game-clinching interception that would seal the deal. And at that point, Green Bay gets the ball back and just takes a knee and goes into halftime, up 14-0. They come out. All right. They come out. Chicago's ball. Cutler comes out again. All right. Does nothing with that first possession. Throws the ball, hit Matt Forte in the knees. Basically, threw a ball at Matt Forte's feet, and they go three and out. They went three and out. Then you have Green Bay get the ball back, and you had the Urlacher interception that kept Chicago in the game. That was really a game-changing play, because if Green Bay goes up 17, forget about 21-0. If Green Bay goes up 20-17, even 17-0, that game would have been completely over with. Chicago would not have been heard from for the rest of the day. So that Urlacher interception was huge. It was a great play also on the part of Aaron Rodgers for making a touchdown saving tackle on Urlacher, who is fast. I mean, he's a quick linebacker, maybe not as quick as he used to be, but you know, can play safety in college. So he does have good speed, and almost took it back, but Aaron Rodgers saved the day with that. All right. At that point, when they get the ball, Chicago gets the ball, you have Todd Collins in and Cutler out. And the reason why I bring up that sequence of plays is, you know, there were question marks about Cutler's toughness, whether he was hurt or not. They pulled himself out of the game and Roger and so on and so on. Turns out, of course, he had a sprained MCL grade 2 tear and would not be playing in the Super Bowl. He would not be playing in the Super Bowl had the Bears advanced. So, and I bring up that sequence because he chose to go out twice, not once after the injury, twice. He went out before halftime in Chicago's last possession through an interception, and he comes out after halftime when Chicago had the first possession of the third quarter with a bad knee. Okay. And then was pulled out by Lovie Smith and the medical staff, and replaced by Todd Collins. Nobody can sit up here and question the toughness of that guy or question whether or not he was injured or say he should continue to play. First of all, you're not on the field, number one. You're not on the field. You don't know what the medical staff has seen when they examined him. You don't know, you know, it's not your body. It's just the guy, obviously he knows his body better than anybody, better than anyone. But it's not a shock that the average fan or that a media member who's never played a game in their life or never taken a snap or never taken a hit in their life in terms of tackle football questions Jay Cutler. The shock to me comes when you have current and ex-players going nuts on Twitter and ripping this guy. I mean, and Maurice Jones-Drew comes to mind. Maurice Jones-Drew missed the last, you know, he said he played all season with a bad knee. Yes, you almost played all season with a bad knee because you missed the last two games of the season. You didn't play in week 16 and 17 because you had torn cartilage in your knee. Did anybody come out and say Maurice Jones-Drew is soft or he should have played when his team was fighting for a playoff spot? No. I mean, for ex and current players to come out and rip this guy, to me, just, you know, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And now you criticize him for his demeanor on the field or for his, you know, because he wasn't cheering or his facial expression was too, you know, like he didn't care. I mean, that's a bunch of garbage. The guy had an injury. He came back from the injury twice. Okay, he came back from the injury twice to step on the field. Now, all of a sudden, he doesn't want to play in the NFC Championship. Doctors, Lovie Smith and the doctors took him out of the game. He didn't pull himself out of the game. He was taken out of the game. Lovie Smith said, "You're not going back in. Todd Collins, you're in the game." It's just that simple. Get your facts straight. Especially even if you're a media member, get your facts straight before you go make any snap judgments. You know, it's easy to sit back and just say, "Oh, he's tough," or "Phillip Rivers played with a torn ACL." Okay, that's great. Phillip Rivers played with a torn ACL, but you know what? Was it the smartest thing that Phillip Rivers was playing with a torn ACL? And you give Phillip Rivers credit for doing that and sacrificing his body, so you can give him credit for doing that. But don't knock Jay Cutler for not playing with a sprained MCL tear. When, again, he's not been cleared by the doctors, and he was pulled out of the game by Lovie Smith. I can give a damn about his demeanor on the sideline. He's hurt, and there's nothing he could do for that team sitting on the sideline. Oh, he could have helped, you know, Caleb Haney. Please. Injured players are like ghosts in the NFL. They don't exist. When you're injured, there's really nothing for you to do as an injured player. You know, you can give tips and, you know, you can hold a clipboard, but, you know, that's what the offensive coordinators, the assistants and the assistant coaches and all that, that's their job at that point. You're an injured player, you're just injured, you can boot, and there's nothing you really can do as an injured player on the sidelines. Now, if anybody wants to knock, you know, Lovie Smith, you know, knock him for having Ty Collins as the backup in comparison to Caleb Haney, who came in and was, you know, probably the best quarterback, the second best quarterback on the field. Because Caleb Haney came in, made some good, you know, did some good work. I know he had a couple of picks, but for a guy who had not taken a snap of any consequence or any importance throughout the whole season, he came in and did a great job. He sparked the offense, you know, had a touchdown pass, you know, and kept the Bears in the game and had a chance to tie the game, you know, going down the stretch at 21-14. So you can, and Ty Collins, I mean, my goodness, I mean, retire right now. Yeah, you can knock, you can definitely knock Lovie Smith for Ty Collins even being on your roster. I mean, oh my goodness, he was a freak show out there. But again, similar to the first game to the AFC Championship, the better team won. I mean, the Green Bay Packers are clearly a superior team to the Chicago Bears. Mike Martin, you couldn't try, and now that I've given Cutler credit about this injury, he was, as far as his on the field play, he was awful. Cutler was just, he was dreadful even before the injury. And Mike Marks, 3rd-and-3, right? Mike Marks has a 3rd-and-3, and he runs a reverse with Earl Bennett. I mean, that's typical Mike Marks. He runs a reverse with Earl Bennett on a 3rd-and-3 play. When you're driving for a potential game-tying touchdown. This was before the interception. This was before the interception. But, I mean, you walk away from that game, you know, kind of disappointed in Green Bay about their performance in the second half because, you know, to me, there's nothing Chicago did. Unlike the Jets, stepped up their level of play in the second half. They were clearly a different team. They played 100 times better, and they really stepped up in the second half. The Bears didn't – I don't think the Bears did anything different in the second half in comparison to the first half as far as stepping up their play. To me, that was more about the Packers just completely letting down and just giving them – just, you know, tossing them life support, you know, life preservers. It's like, here, you know what? You're not out of the game. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. We're going. Here you go. Aaron Rodgers interception. Here you go. Here you go, Brian Urlacher. I mean, the Packers almost tried to gift wrap that game, and single handedly kept the Bears in that game as it should not have been that hard for the Packers. And that's why I walked away from that game thinking about it. And I've been on the Packers bandwagon since. You know, since the New England game when they almost beat, you know, when they almost beat the Patriots with Matt Flynn at quarterback. So I've been on that bandwagon for a while now. But as we go into the Super Bowl, you know, and we have plenty of time to talk about that and dissect that. You know, I don't know right now, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. An unsung hero for the Packers is to me Ryan Matt Stay in that game, the punter. Ryan Matstay, you know, continuously pinned the Bears deep in their own territory. He created short fields for the offense. He did a tremendous job. And when the Bears were supposed to be the ones that had, you know, the advantage with special teams, he completely neutralized Devin Hester. Hester did not, you know, may have had one good return, had one decent return when he took the ball to the 40. But other than that, you know, Hester did not have a chance. So Ryan Matstay did a tremendous job with that. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he looked good in the first half, really was shaky in the second half, already hitting him. But, again, based on how he performed, he really was, you know, he was due for performance, you know, first championship game. Didn't make a mistake that lost him the game, so I'm not going to get on him too much, basically, especially the way he had been playing coming up to this point. But, again, did not have a good second half at all. He wasn't accurate with the ball. Bears pass rush, Julius Peppers really started to get to him. I mean, they, they laid, you know, Julius Peppers laid the wood to him on that one hit that got the 15-yard roughing the passer penalty. It was absolutely a penalty. It's a helmet-to-helmet hit, and almost knocked Rodgers out of the game. Not Rodgers got up and continued on, but you know, I thought he was just average. You know, had a good first half and was bad in the second half, but did enough to carry his team, get his team to a 21-14 win. And again, that game was about the Packer defense. The Packer defense was, you know, off the charts. I mean, the Packer defense, like I said, yeah, I don't. You're splitting hairs on which defense is better, Packers or Steelers right now. All I know is the Packers defensive line, B.J. Raji with the interception that put the game away. You have Sam Shields and Jamal Williams making play after play. And then you have, you know, the linebackers with, you know, with, of course, Clay Matthews Jr. So there's no weakness whatsoever on with that Packer defense. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL Show, we will talk about and preview Super Bowl 45. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show, 36 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call, 37 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour, taking you to 8:45 on this 24th of January, 2011, 347-215-6180 is your call number, 347-215-6180 is your call number, so let the hype begin. Super Bowl 45 is, you know, not quite upon us, still, you know, 13 days away. And, you know, you look at some of the storylines. First of all, these two teams played one of the crazier games of the 2009 season. Last year in Pittsburgh won 37-36. Ben Roethlisberger had about 500 yards passing, including the game-winning touchdown at the last second to Mike Wallace on the last play of the game. It was a just crazy game. Aaron Rodgers had a big game as well, well over 350 yards passing himself. You know, it was to no avail for the Pittsburgh Steelers as they would go on and not make the playoffs, and Green Bay would go on to go 11-5 and play in the wild card. So they played a ridiculous game last year. I don't know how much stock you want to put into that now. Both defenses are much better than what they were last year. I mean, despite the fact that Green Bay's ranking last year was number 2 compared to it being number 5, Green Bay defensively this year has been, you know, in terms of points allowed, they've been borderline just dominant. And so Pittsburgh's defense certainly was much better this year as well. Remember, last year there was no Troy Polamalu for much of that season. He got, you know, hurt his ankle, got hurt in the opening game against Tennessee. It was never the same for the better part of that year. And I look at the stats now, Pittsburgh had 537 total yards of total offense. Green Bay had 436. Roethlisberger was 26-48. Rodgers was 26-48, 383, 3 touchdowns, no picks. And Roethlisberger was, let's look at that right here. Roethlisberger was 29 46 for 503 yards and three touchdowns. They get no interception. So it was, you know, a classic shootout. And, again, don't expect to see that this time around. I think this game be more defensive laden than certainly in that. But there are going to be some points, though. There are going to be some points. Both these offenses can move the ball. You know, Green Bay, certainly receivers, certainly create some matchup problems for Pittsburgh's defense in terms of being able to spread them out. That's the way you go at Pittsburgh. Is, you know, you have to, it's almost impossible to run on them. You have to spread them out. You have to use your run, your pass to set up the run. If you try to run against them straight up, it's not going to work. You have to spread them out and loosen up that run defense by being able to throw the ball. As far as Pittsburgh going against Green Bay's defense, again, I still think the way to beat Green Bay is by running the football. I think if you're a power running team, you can have some success with running the ball on Green Bay. Hard to throw against them right now. I mean, Green Bay's secondary. You talk about Charles Woodson. You know, Charles Woodson has almost been an afterthought. I mean, that's how. And this is a guy. Charles Woodson is a guy who's a Pro Bowler, who's a perennial Pro Bowler, and probably maybe a future Hall of Famer. But these are guys like Tremont Williams and Sam Shields and what have you have played so well. And you know, Nick Collins out there as well. I mean, they have a great secondary. They have one of the best pass defenses in the league. And then you toss in Charles Woodson. So very difficult to throw the ball on Green Bay. Again, though, to me, the way to attack them would be on the ground. A lot of storylines with this, with the history. You're talking about teams who have won nine Super Bowls between them. You add up all the championships, they have 21 championships between them, 18 championships between them. You combine the Super Bowls with the NFL championships. Green Bay, of course, with the 12 championships, and Pittsburgh with the 6 Super Bowls. A lot of history. These are two organizations, and you know, the Redskins certainly could take a lesson. You know, out of the 44 starters that you will see on that field, 35 of them were drafted. So these two organizations, they built from the draft. They don't go out there, you know, throwing money at free agents. They don't even sign that many free agents to begin with. So they built through the draft. They, you know, developed their players. Their players stay within the system and get better. And next thing you know, you see a Tremont Williams, you see a Sam Shields, or you see a James Starks, or you see a guy like Antonio Brown or Emmanuel Sanders or Mike Wallace. You see these guys that were not big names coming out of college emerging and making big-time plays in key playoff games. You know, it's not just the Ben Roethlisbergers, the Aaron Rodgers, and some of the other, you know, star names that Troy Polamalu is making plays. They got guys who are third, fourth, fifth, sixth-round picks making big-time plays. And that's how you build an organization. And these two teams do it as well as anybody. You know, New England withstanding, and you can toss in New England there, you can toss in Indianapolis there, certainly. But these two organizations are, you know, in terms of replacing injured players and developing players, do it as well as anybody in the NFL, and is a big reason why they are playing why they'll be playing in Super Bowl 45. So, looking forward to it. Again, we'll have plenty of time to break it down. We will not go too heavy on the Super Bowl in the next Saturday morning wake-up call. But we certainly will go heavy with it in our Super Bowl program a couple of weeks, you know, about another 12 days or so. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little football on Saturday morning wake-up call. I will see you then. Have a great evening. And, again, congratulations to the Green Bay Packers and the Pittsburgh Steelers fans. You guys, you know, those teams deserve to be there. And those, to me, are the two best teams in the NFL. And they certainly deserve to be playing for a World Championship. So long.